Well, it is a great pleasure for my latest Nostalgia interview to meet Harry Bowles. Good morning, Harry.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
No, an absolute pleasure. Of course, we met on the film programme. We were literally just two floors up from the studio at KMTV, where we recorded an episode of Kent Film Club just a few weeks ago. And of course, you are also a very accomplished podcaster.
Accomplished is maybe a stretch. I do podcasting, Nerds Against Normality, where we talk, you know, films, TV series, gaming, anime, anything nerdy, pretty much.
How long have you been doing it?
So we've just released our 15th episode, so 15 weeks.
Yeah. Well, I did mine, I started my podcast in 2018, and I thought, well, if I get up to 20, that would be great. And then you think, I'll do 30. Then there's a point where you're thinking there's momentum here. So I'm guessing that your aim is to do it for as long as you can.
Yeah, whilst it's all feasible and we enjoy it, why not? Because at the moment, it's just my wife and my friend, we just meet up and it's have, you know, a couple of drinks and some dinner, and then it's chat about a film. So it's very nice, it's very cosy. There's no stress either, because, you know, we're just getting a small steady stream of listeners, and it's just fun.
Yeah, but that's the thing about a podcast, isn't it? Because you can have those sort of conversations that, you know, in yesteryear, people would say, if only we could record this. I've been in situations in my life, people would say, if only we had a record of this for posterity. But here, of course, in the form of a podcast, you can do that. But do you plan in advance what you're going to talk about? Because I know you talk about games, you talk about film. So do you sort of have a plan to talk about a range of subjects? Or is it sort of, you know, each episode will have its own sort of area of focus?
Do you know what? When we first started, it was very much film of the week. So my wife would be like, I want to talk about this film because I like it. And then I'd be like, yeah, well, I like this film. But there wasn't any cohesion. And then we thought, you know, what we should do is actually look at the algorithm. So we started looking at, it's Halloween, so we should probably do a horror film. It's the election's coming up, so we should do something around the presidency. And the Christmas is coming up, so we've recorded our Christmas episode. Also, like, the Game Awards are coming up mid-December, so we're going to do a Game Awards episode and review a game. So now there's a bit more to it, as before, when we were first doing it for just a laugh, it was just pick of the week.
And do you have, I mean, in terms of listenership, because I'm also fascinated by your answer, because I sort of want to know, as far as my own podcast is concerned, you know, how do you have the maximum reach? But do you have an idea, an inkling of who listens, where they're listening, and to what extent you're kind of serving a particular need?
So the website we use is called Podbean, and that's where we would upload our episodes, and it distributes it to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the usual suspects, YouTube. And on Podbean, you can literally go log into it, and it'll go 80% of your listeners are from the United Kingdom, and you can drill into that, and it'll be like 20% are from Wales, 10% of Scotland, or it also tells you, you know, worldwide. It would be like, if you got any American listeners, you click on the American icon, and then it'll come up, people like California listened to your episode 4 times, Nevada listened to, you know, and it comes up with that kind of stuff. I've got a friend who lives in Australia, and I always have a couple of Australian listens.
Yeah. Well, because I use Audioboom, and it's very similar. And actually, I haven't checked it lately, but when I started, I was almost to the point of obsession, thinking, where are people listening? And you'd get the really quirky ones. Like, and also, it was great for my geography, because I'd find that there were particular towns, or, you know, in America that maybe I'd never heard of. Or, you know, once I was interviewing somebody who was from, I think she was from Romania, and suddenly all these different sort of villages in Romania were coming up. So I thought, well, it's obviously reached the right people, because obviously they must be family members. But occasionally there'll be something, you know, in a far-flung part of the world, and I'm thinking, gosh, you know, was this accidental? Or maybe somebody I know who might have been on holiday, for example. But you start imagining all this sort of, you know, the way that you're sitting in a room as we are now in Medway, but this could be listened to in Missouri.
It is bizarre, and you almost like chase it, don't you? Like you said, you get a little bit obsessed. So I released the episode, and I've figured out that if you release an episode, Tuesday to Thursday is the prime time. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they're prime time podcasts. And if you drop them at 3 a.m, it gets the American net, so you can cast that net that way. So they're listening, and then when British people are waking up, the first thing they'll see, if they subscribe, will be new episode available. So when I get up and do breakfast and walk the dog, I can then check it and go, okay, this one's been a success. So this, the one we've released literally today, funny enough, made an appearance on your show. It was the Dragon Ball Z one.
Of course.
Because it was my birthday on the 17th. So I thought, you know what, it's my birthday, it's my pick. I'm going to do something that I love. It was on the KMTV. Makes sense to kind of merge them. And I'm a little bit dubious whether this will get many hits, only because we are small podcasts growing, and our bigger hits are stuff like Alien. We did Inside Out 2, stuff like that. Bigger brands that people will be searching for. I'm not sure the algorithm's looking for Dragon Ball Z.
Well, but you never know, because as I learned, because the first time I learned about it, I remember, is it Z or Z?
Yeah.
Z. But then, of course, I did a bit of research on this, and there really is a following for this, as you obviously talked about on the programme. So you never quite know, because people are looking for something quirky that, you know, there may not be all that many podcasts, maybe there are, you know, that are with that particular focus. So in that sense, you can corner the market.
That is true. Sometimes we you can get lost. So we got lost when we did a Halloween film, literally called Halloween. Now, my editor said, great, if you get caught up in a good wave. He's like, but you can get lost, because there's so many people searching for Halloween that they might not find you.
It can work both ways. But did you, when you mentioned putting out at 3 a.m, what's the interval between when you record and when you put it out?
We like to be a couple of weeks ahead, just in case. So my friend Ben, he literally works in film. He's working on a Netflix project at the moment. So he works all sorts of hours. And if he, for whatever reason, can't make it, if we've got one in the bank, it's lovely, nice and easy. Over Christmas, we're trying to get 3 or 4 ahead, just because we're now going to be releasing them on Wednesdays. And Christmas Day is a Wednesday, New Year's Day is a Wednesday. I don't think we really feel up for too many recordings over that period.
No, but it's kind of nice when you record in advance, and then, of course, when it goes out. I mean, I suppose when I started doing mine, I imagined that people would be listening, you know, on the moment of release. But, and by and large, people do. I mean, the most traffic will be on the first day or two, I find, after release. But, you know, in theory, they're there any time. And it's so occasionally one podcast that I might have done, say, 4 years ago, will suddenly appear as, you know, this had 4 listens today or something. Maybe it's one person listening 4 times. And you think, you know, so it's kind of nice that there is this record. And occasionally I'll go back over some of the older ones, and it's just interesting to sort of see, you know, where that person was at that moment and how their journey has followed. And, you know, if we were to do the same interview now, it wouldn't be the same interview, because obviously there are different things to talk about. So there's that sort of capturing a moment in time.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's brilliant as well. And I think it's interesting, not so much for me yet, but I imagine if you listened to something from 4 years ago, you'd go, oh, I wouldn't have done that. Yeah. I was a bit different there, or I was a bit naive there. I'd say, because there's 3 of us, and in the first couple of episodes, you could tell we're trying to find our voice, and we're talking over each other a lot, and it was hard to find our feet because of the 3 of us. But now, we kind of have a bit of a better dynamic, a bit more free-flowing. It's not as stiff, I find.
And it's the same with, like, Zoo Radio, I suppose, when, you know, sometimes you're talking either, well, you're talking to an audience, but you're also talking to each other. And that's a really good point, because you have to think through what it might sound like. Because, you know, are you doing this for yourselves? Are you doing it for somebody in Missouri, or, you know, or wherever it might be picked up? So you've got to strike that balance. And I think the only way you can really do it is through experience. Because if you listen back, and I assume that you do listen back to your podcasts, then in listening back, sometimes you might cringe, and sometimes you might think, I can't believe I said that. Or you might think, I'll edit that bit out. but also you're thinking, well, no, that this is a natural, authentic conversation. This is what we did at a particular moment. This is what we wanted to talk about. That's what mattered to us. But the more you do, I think the more aware you are of where you're taking this, and whether sometimes you think, well, I don't need to ask that question. It may have been right for the previous episode, the previous guest, but actually it's, you know, in a way that question's already been answered in a different way, or maybe the conversation has moved in a direction that my questions, which I may have, you know, thought in advance would be good to draw on, are no longer applicable.
Yeah, oh, we haven't had a guest yet, so watch this space.
Well, well, that's the thing, isn't it? But so when you talk about this, would you like watch a film like Halloween specifically, or might you just sort of draw on? I remember seeing this three Halloweens ago.
No, so we have a little pact. We're like, right, we're recording on Friday. We need to record. We need to do two podcasts. So what we'll do is we split it. So an episode will be generally 25 minutes catch up, which would be between the three of us what we'll be watching, what we'll be gaming, reading, anything like that, any funny stories. And then 35 minutes of it will be a review of whatever Halloween. But we all say that we have to watch it prior, you know, and we have one person will lead it. So each week it will be, so week one is me, week two is Stacey, week three is Ben. And so they're like, they introduce it, they'll come out with the box office and trivia. And also what I quite like is, so my wife, she has a degree in film study. Ben works in film, and we kind of contrast in opinions a lot because I'm the layman, you know. I don't see all the appreciate. I don't appreciate everything that they do. So my wife's very hot on like the costumes and the colours. She'll pick up on vibes. She'll be like, "What you do? Did you understand that all of them there are dressed in purple and that represents?" Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, "No," but the fight scene was cool, yeah. You know. And Ben's similar. He sees things, so we don't always agree. So I think that's the dynamic of it.
But that's the highlight, though, isn't it? Because it's the things that you can't plan in advance. I saw the Paddington film with one of my daughters a couple of weeks ago, and I was chatting about it with a former work colleague who give a spoiler for anybody listening, switch off now. But Olivia Colman's character plays a nun. Let's just say she may not be who she seems. And you're watching it, and I thought, we were hoodwinked there. And the chaplain, he said, "Oh, I knew the moment she came on." And I thought, "Oh, yeah." And I thought, well, because I watch lots of films, I review lots of films, and I thought, well, I'm used to people having, you know, there being a crisis of identity, or somebody, you know, in a film noir sort of way, you know, they're the femme fatale or something. And but when I was watching it, that didn't go through my head. So it just took somebody else to say that, you know, something that they saw as being really obvious. So, you know, I got to that same point, but it took me a lot longer to get there. And but that's the best bit, because it's the conversation between, you know, two people who saw the same thing, but you may have both had a different apprehension of it when you watched it. And then the conversation, and anybody listening can sort of, you know, feel, yeah, I know where that's going. That, you know, and in a way they're shouting at the podcast and sort of saying, yes, that's exactly, and they want to hear where you go with it.
And they will relate with one of you, you know. I do find now, thanks to my wife, a lot of films have been ruined for me. So I would go into a film, just be completely oblivious. And now, if they all walk in with black, and I'm like, oh, or someone's going to die, because that's that, you know, that's why they've all walked in black. Or if there's any kind of villain and there's an English person on screen or a Russian, you're like, that's the bad guy. It's full of tropes, and then 9 times out of 10 it goes that way. So yeah, thank you, Stacey, for that.
Well, yeah, but also you must find that when you're not recording the podcast, that you're probably having conversations that then feed into what you want to talk about in the podcast. You must think, okay, let's save this one, or let's continue this conversation.
It's really hard, yes. Like, especially if we watch something. It's easier if we did like a classic like Halloween, because it's very old. We spoke about it lots and lots and lots. But say if we went to the cinema, what was a good one? Alien Romulus. We went to see that. And that was the second episode we dropped. Me, Ben and Stace, we went to see it. And we normally, we'd go to Maidstone, we'd go to the car park, and we'd basically have like a wind down for 20 minutes where we'd talk about the film. And we were like, right, pause, you know, put that, you know, put it all in the bank, and then we'll talk about it tomorrow when we record. And that's quite difficult. And trying to remember it correctly as well. Like, I don't have the greatest memory of film. I remember things very differently. So I like to keep a fresh... Look, I have to record quite quickly after, and I take notes during the film. Not if it's in the cinema. I'm not an animal.
Well, there was a time before mobile phones, or, you know, sort of in the... It's a Nick Hornby novel. It might be, no, not Fever Pitch, it's the one, High Fidelity. And the protagonist in that story is has a girlfriend who's a film critic, and she takes this sort of luminous pen or illuminated pen with her into the cinema, and she's making notes. And he said how annoying it was to be sitting next to him, and he could just see this yellow or purple, whatever it is, kind of thing. But even now, I would be very. I always. That's the one time I switch my phone off when I'm at the cinema, because I don't want anyone contacting me, and also it's respecting the ambience. But there are occasions, particularly if I go to one of those, you know, with Cineworld, and they'll show an unlimited screening, or that they'll show, you know, you don't a secret screening, you don't know in advance what they're going to show. And occasionally you're thinking, as soon as it tells you what it is, you can look it up. And people obviously do that, because I know a film came on, and it was less than 5 seconds into the film, and people were like, oh, we're going to leave. And I thought, but how could they have known that this is a film they didn't want to watch? Just from the title. So they must have been sort of doing a quick IMDb or otherwise, and obviously determined that it was not worth the next 2 hours of their time.
A medieval drama. No, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, well, there was a time, and I remember thinking about people, it was when The Batman came out, and there was an unlimited screening about a week or two before, and quite a few people, interestingly, left. And I remember thinking, and it was Belfast, the Candice Branagh film, which started in black and white, and it's based around the Troubles in Northern Ireland in the late 60s. And so, and understandably, it may just not be people's cup of tea, but or if it's a horror film, it happens quite a lot. As soon as people see it's a horror, they leave. And I'm sometimes thinking that's a shame, because you go in knowing that it could be anything. And, you know, in that sense, I thought, well, it's, you know, the whole point of the evening is that you genuinely don't know where you're going to be taken.
Yeah.
So you know, if you leave within the first few minutes, it distracts other people as well, because you're more aware that some people might leave immediately, some people might leave after 10 minutes, some people leave after half an hour. By the last half hour, you know that everyone who's left wants to be there, but you sort of see this attrition, you know, and very occasionally no one leaves, but, you know, it's unusual for everybody to stay in their seats, because they obviously say, no, this is not my genre.
I would be very interested, because I've never done one of those, and it would be quite cool to review it, because, like you say, it could be anything. It could absolutely be anything. But I don't even know how to start looking at that. Do they just advertise it and you just go?
Well, I've got an unlimited card, and it's possible that they might open it to the general public. I think that in recent years they have done. But what it is that they run them, you know, every couple of months. So they'll have, you know, 10 or 11 a year, perhaps. And you don't know what you're going to watch. And recently they have, particularly around Halloween, they might introduce a horror-themed one. So, of course, So they call it like secret screaming. So, you know, it's, so yeah, very clever. So, you know, if you don't like horror, you just wouldn't go. But I have mixed thoughts on them, because I like to know what I'm going to watch. Because there was one time when I did see one of those secret screenings, and it turned out to be a film that went on to win the Oscar for Best Picture. But because I didn't know how long the film was, it took me a while to get into the groove, and I was aware that some people were leaving.
So you don't even have a runtime?
No, they tell you things like, oh, it's 90 minutes. But I realised that they said, at first I thought, oh, if it's 90 minutes, then that sometimes gives you an idea. It's not going to be a big historical epic.
Yes.
Yeah, but yeah. They say 90 minutes, but actually that's just to, you know, like the default thing that they put up on the system. So occasionally, because I know the staff there, they might sort of say, yeah, it'll finish at so-and-so. But also, because if I'm watching something, it's interesting that even whether I've got my watch available or not, you know, mentally I'm sort of computing that this is a 2-hour film, so I sort of know where, you know, the sort of general sort of path it's going to follow. But when you don't know whether it could be an hour and a half or it could be 3 hours, then actually I'm sort of sitting there feeling, no, I need to do this justice. I need to watch it again when I know those contours.
Okay. No, I would very much look into that, because I've got the Odeon version.
Yeah, they do it. They do it.
Limitless.
Yeah, they do.
It's called.
Yeah. They do those secret screenings, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why not?
Yeah.
I would say free. You know, pay them up.
Yeah.
You may as well go for it. Why not? So over the Christmas period, what are we looking forward to most? Moana 2. Very much looking forward to that. Moana's up there. I think it's one of the best of the animated Disney films. What else is coming out? Gladiator 2's come out, hasn't it? Which I think we're probably not going to have time to watch. Because of the Christmas period, we need to do Christmas films. We've gone Home Alone
of course.
For Christmas. It's a classic. My Christmas pick was Violent Night, if you've seen
it. Yes, I have seen that.
Yeah. Is it David Harbour?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is Die Hard you know, Christmas style. But that was my pick, and the wife picked Home Alone.
Yeah. No, Violence, that's got... That's the one where Santa is holed up, isn't he? There's like a kidnapping thing. And one of the actresses in that was in the National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. So there were all sort of like nods to other Christmas films.
Yeah.
And also maybe cameos from some of those stars. So if you know your Christmas films, and that's a genre I'm particularly keen on, then, you know, sort of watching them, you see all that sort of cross-referencing.
It was brilliant. He's like an ex-Nordic warrior, I think. He was an ex-Viking, and he was an expert with the hammer, and it comes into play. Yeah, it's very good.
Very good.
The one film I have to say, as a geek, the film I'm looking forward to the most would be Sonic 3, actually.
Yes.
I'm absolutely buzzing for it, I have to say.
Have you seen that in the format that I saw it with my children, which was in 4DX?
No.
Obviously not the one that hasn't come out yet. Maybe it was Sonic 2, I can't remember. But we saw it in that mode. And possibly it was in 3D. But the combination of 3D... and 4DX, I think it almost sort of made me feel that, you know, it's like going on a fairground ride that doesn't stop. or it does stop for a bit, but then it carries on when you're still in that seat. And I think I came away thinking, oh, maybe I'm just too old for this anymore.
I think I'm going to go for the IMAX on 3, I think, because that's the first one they're going to release in the IMAX. Yeah. Because that would be looping right round to the nostalgia aspect. With the gaming, Sonic is like my franchise. It's the one thing that I love. He says, sat in a Nintendo t-shirt. I'm a turncoat. No, so if you remember back in the early 90s, I don't know if you're a gamer at all, or you knew anything about gaming back then.
Not really.
But you must have been aware of the Sega versus Nintendo
divide. Yes.
In the playground, you were one or the other. You either had a Mega Drive or you had a SNES, and it's very tribal, and you could only be one. I don't know what it's like supporting a football team. You couldn't have both. That's ridiculous, you know. And you had to sit and fight in your corner, and I had a Mega Drive. So for that, I would... obviously, Sonic was the flagship, the mascot, and unfortunately, they stopped making consoles back in 2001. But they still release their games. They're a software developer now. But my love for gaming developed into my business, which was called 184-Bit Gaming. And that part of me, that's now my main job. And all I do is I buy and sell retro video games. And honestly, the draw of nostalgia is insane. So I did it as a project over COVID, where I would buy bundles, big bundles, and I would keep a couple of games for myself for my collection. And I don't know why, because I've never actually played them, but having them, it kind of gave me a slice of what I had as a child. And it was like a nice warm feeling. I would then, once I've sold on the bundle, I'd make a little bit of profit, I'd buy another bundle, and I'd grow the collection, grow the bank. And then when COVID hit, first 2 weeks it was lovely because I was in a full-time job and I was getting furlough, and I thought, brilliant, 2 weeks off and I'm just going to play video games and sit inside. And then after 2 weeks I was like, oh, this isn't going away, and I'm going to end up in an early grave if I keep living this way. So I need a project.
Yeah.
And so I thought, you know what, sod it. I will just take a lump sum of £300 and I will try and find some bundles. And if I lose the £300, it sucks to be me. But it's not, you know, it's not the worst case scenario. If I lose it, I lose it. But if I could turn it into something, brilliant. And then as the months went on, you know, I was rolling over, getting bigger bundles. And then COVID went away. I didn't go away. Everything went back to new normal. Had to put the business on pause. Then COVID happened again. The lockdown happened again.
Yeah.
So I went back into it. This time it was because I had the money there, I could start off at a much faster pace and I was really getting into it. Then when we went out of lockdown again for the final time, I was doing both, side by side. And after about a year of going side by side, I was doing both jobs quite poorly. I was thinking, one's got to go here because I'm being a bad manager and I'm being a bad trader. So what should I do? And I thought, sod it. Let's take the leap. I will can my stable, secure job for this video game, you know, franchises, and you know, just go for that side of it. And so far, so good. I did that in February. I canned my job in February, and I love it. You get to meet lots of like-minded people, and like I said, the tribalism back in the day. Cause I deal with people of similar age. I'd say I deal with people 35 through to 50, and they all have that similar. Well, I'm Sega till I die. I will die on that hill. Or I'm Nintendo till I die, I'll die on that hill. PlayStation, whatever. They've all got their franchises. But what's funny about the video games that people buy from yesteryear is that then, and don't hate me, gamers, but a lot of them aren't very good. Like, modern games have evolved and they are much better. They do everything much better. But what they don't replicate is that feeling of the first time you played that game, or the association you have. It might have been Christmas, or you might have played it with your brother, anything like that. It's brilliant, and it gets a little bit patchy, my love for video games, because it gets a bit dark, I guess. So I grew up in a bit of a broken home, and it was a lot of the domestic violence, all this stuff, and video games would be my escapism. So when I turned that console on, I could just blinker the outside world and I could just focus on whatever. And I think a lot of people give video games a bad rap. I see a lot of parents giving, you know, oh, GTA ruined my child and all this stuff. And fair enough, if you're buying your 8-year-old GTA, don't expect good things to happen. So don't do that. But what I don't think they get enough credit for is imagination. It gives, like, I went into art. I love art because of the imagination behind the video games. Also, because of the household I was brought up in, like, I never did any schoolwork, I never did any homework. I basically learned how to read via Final Fantasy on the PlayStation. And same with my friend Lee. He was a similar boat. He couldn't really read. And we learnt together as, like, I think we were about 12, you know, learning how to read properly through Final Fantasy. It's all text box. And these games are like 50-hour games, so it's a long time. But I think it's nice to push the good side of gaming.
Because there is that thing sometimes, isn't there, where you're following somebody else's dream, that somebody thinks, oh, you should read this, or you should, you know, I used to play the piano and it had no interest in it, but I did it because that was kind of the thing to do. My passion for radio has been there since I was really young. I think my parents didn't quite know what to make of it, really, because it was like, oh, well, is this going to be a job, and how's that going to work? And here I am now at the age of 51, I do radio, but I had a job in between. But much as I loved that, similar to what you were saying, there comes a point when you're like, well, it doesn't really define me. There are other things I need to do, and you have to work out how you balance. You know, obviously having payment, or you have a mortgage to pay, or children, or whatever it might be. But also up against the thing that defines you. Because I was at a conference many years ago. Somebody was probably in her 40s, maybe at the time late 30s. It's probably about a decade ago. And she was doing some work on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Okay.
Now, she grew up with that when she was a teenager, and she was like, you know, that defined her. And, you know, but when she got a bit older, obviously you have respectable jobs, and you, you know, you kind of. But she said that she started to find and was interested in researching all these online communities of people like her who were in their 30s and 40s, who were defined not by their jobs or their families, but by Buffy. So, you know, almost like by night, then, you know, they'd come home, they'd do their 9-to-5, and then they'd go on their blogs, and they'd watch and share all the, you know, similar, I guess, to what you're saying. And it was almost like, but these are the sort of things that they don't talk about, because the people they work with, the people that their neighbours or their friends, who are around them, are not interested in this. This is where you have to go far afield. That, you know, there may be somebody in another country, but, you know, they're the satellite of people they may never meet, but with whom they have so much in common.
Well, I think that's one of the perks of how it is now. Like you say, you can, oh, I could message someone in New Zealand as we're speaking, you know, or you could put out a Reddit thread, and yeah, you'll get some trolls, but you'll find some good people in there as well. And that's another thing that's massively changed. Like, being a gamer in the early 90s, it was almost like frowned upon. It was like, ugh, geek, you game, ugh. And it's really funny because it's the same with like Marvel. Marvel back then, it was a bit like, oh god, you're a nerd, that's not cool. And you can't look anywhere now, right? Marvel t-shirts, like the franchise they own, if you look at the top 10 box office hits, it's littered with Marvel. And then you go further, top 50, still littered. Same with gaming, like the gaming industry now, I think I read a fact, it holds more money now than the film and music industry combined. It's absurd. Like, gaming has just taken the world, and it's just such a far cry from, oh god, you own a, Nintendo, you child.
Well, and people said that about film in, you know, in the 1930s or Prohibition, you know, you shouldn't be watching that, it's going to make people commit crime because they're watching gangster films. But, you know, but often the idea that somehow you watch something and then you become the person that you're watching, the idea that somehow you don't have any sort of critical control, that's the naive sort of way of looking at it. But you are right, because actually, I was just thinking last night, because you mentioned Marvel, but I'm old enough to remember 1989 when Batman came out, you know, the Tim Burton. Yeah. And of course, they created the rating, the 12, because my children who are, my boys who are primary school age, I took them to see Ghostbusters 2, which I saw when it came out in 1989 the other day, and it's PG, but they were asking about the rating, and then it struck me that, so when I saw that in 89, assuming it was a PG then, the 12 rating in cinemas had just come in because of Batman. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they brought it in.
They made it in for that.
Just for that. So what happened? Because it was, I think originally it was going to be given a 15, but they knew that a lot of people who'd want to watch it would be younger.
Yeah.
So that effectively, so that 12 rating was because of, my surname's DC, but you know, DC, you know, DC yeah. films. So that was a big thing, but I didn't go to the cinema in those days. I did see Batman Returns in 92 at the cinema. But it's fascinating for me to look back and remember where I was in 89 I was, 16, but to remember, not through first-hand experience, because you're talking about nostalgia there, but almost it's the nostalgia of other people around me, which it may have taken a few decades, but which now I completely embrace. So when I watch films like Batman, I'm thinking of all my friends who saw it and talked about it, and those playground conversations, and it's sort of like now I've caught up with them. But maybe exceeded in some ways, because, you know, I do this with, you know, to a point of obsession. I watch, you know, my cinema outings are very regular. But there is something in there, isn't there, about tapping into something that really matters from childhood?
Yeah, I mean, I think the word you used, obsession, that is the word I would use. Yeah. I really would. Not just with the games. People, they want to talk to me about games. I should be a bit more harsh. So I'm obviously a businessman, first and foremost. But a lot of the time, people just want to talk to me. And I will just, I will indulge. And I'll be like, yeah. You know, the Dreamcast was so good. I must have had that conversation hundreds of times. But they are obsessed. And I think it's a good outlet. Because like I said, we find lots of like-minded people. A lot of people have the same... So these people, without sounding horrible to gamers, they probably would have been picked on, you know, and that's where they found their comfort, their consoles. They could just turn it off, switch their brain off, and go into that world. And for them to find people now so accessible is brilliant. And I wouldn't change it for the world, I have to say. I probably am not as financially well off as what I was, but the fact that I love it. I wake up every day and...
It's a labour of love.
Yes.
But also that's the driver, because if nobody is making you do something, and you could say that about the podcast, I don't make money off it. I mean, the equipment wasn't that expensive to buy, but I travel, and I guess in that sense I incur costs. But imagine a world where I wasn't doing something like this. You know, in a way there's always that sort of no going back. That I'm good at taking on projects and not letting go of them, but there's a point sort of, you know, something has to give. But if you're driven to do it, and obviously if you make money from it, even better. But I am interested in that sort of thing of sometimes we're trying to almost retrieve or recreate something, maybe from our past, that we kind of feel this defines us. But there were other things that defined us. And it may be that at the time people were like, oh no, don't go down that path. You know, piano versus radio. Looking back now, it's almost laughable. But at the time, piano won out. But, you know, my own children, are, I'm thinking of the boys who are will be 10 in April. They're really into games. And I can't help them because I'm not in that, you know, that I mean, the film, we have the film connection for sure. But again, it's a generational thing. You know, if I was a bit younger, if I was your age, I probably would be into this, you know, I'd have a different sort of outlook, I suppose. But it matters. And you, the important thing is that you can't be swayed by somebody else's narrative, like, oh, don't play video games, because you're thinking, well, you, but your reason for that is, you know, you're coming from some, that's coming from somebody maybe who's never played it.
I think also the harder people push away those sort of things, yeah, don't do that. I think it's human nature to go, well, now I'm going to do it even more. Yeah. You know, I'll play video games even more just to spite you.
Yeah.
But I had the same talks with my parents when I was, you know, saying I'm going to be giving up my job and I'm going to be selling video games. And they literally laughed and was like, what are you on about? Like, are you going to sell video games? And I was like, yeah, why not? I was like, someone's got to do it. There is a, you know, there is a gap in the market for the just solely retro games. Because you've obviously got Game, you've got Amazon, you've got CX, you've got lots of big companies out there that do gaming. And that's why I don't touch anything new. Because I can't compete. These people, they will buy 1,000 copies of the newest Call of Duty and sell them off at a profit. I can't afford to do that. I don't have the space to do that. So what I like to do is what I do. And like I say, I get to drive around the country. I normally, that is one thing that is a bit sad about what I do. I normally only buy bundles from people that need to sell up. They're not selling
up. So they're like movie house, for example.
It's more stuff like divorce, need money. COVID was a killer for people that they couldn't sustain their mortgage. Yeah. And so, you know, that's, they didn't reach out to me. And because I have got a heart, and like you see some of these people, they lowball so much. You're, just for argument's sake, let's just say this guy had a £10,000 collection. And you see people going, I'll give you £2,000 for it. I think that's just heartless. Mm. This person, it's his collection as well, like, which he is attached to, like he has an emotional attachment to. And now I'm not saying you should give him the value because you've got to make money as well. Like, and I try to explain this to people, like, I pay tax, I've got to put food on the table, I've got a mortgage, but I also don't want to see you out of pocket. And I think that's how I got my rep, is that, so people will now come to me, I don't really look for bundles anymore. Someone will just drop me a message going, hey, my friend, he's a little bit, you know, stuck with her money and he wants to sell his collection. I had a really sad one the other day. A guy from Ireland messaged me. He said, my best friend passed away. His collection needs to be sold to pay for his funeral. Mm. And he was asking me for advice. And I was like, right, we need to get as much money for you as possible. And I was like, advertise on the groups like this and we'll go for it. I said, oh, I will bid as well. And I will put in a bid to stop any low ballers. And I ended up winning it. So... But I don't mind. I was like, you know, it goes for a good cause.
But it's an integrity in the thing that you're doing, because it, what's coming out from what you're saying is that you're being very open about it. Of course, you need to make money. You know, you know, you have to be a business person who therefore understands business. But at the same time, you could, from what you're saying, you could easily relate to the person who's going through that struggle. And that, in a different scenario, could have been you.
Exactly. If the shoe was on the other foot, I wouldn't want to be taken for an idiot and ripped off. So why should they? You know, and honestly, 99% of the people I deal with are lovely, and they're just on a hard time. There are the 1% which are hard work and frustrating. There was one in particular from Wales which I will never ever deal with again. But no, it's good fun. It's good. And normally when I drive up there, because it's, say if it's up in Manchester, it's 4 or 5 hours, whatever, I'll drive up there, have a cup of tea, then we'll normally go and get lunch. And these people, I've never met them, you know, but because we have that bond, we have the same interests, it's like jumping in with a conversation with an old friend. So we just sit down, have a, you know, bite to eat at the pub, and help, you know, go home, have a cup of tea, and then we conclude business. And then
it actually sounds very similar to what I do with the podcast, in the sense that I'm meeting people in some... Well, normally I do know the person, but I might be reconnecting with somebody that I haven't seen in decades. It might be somebody, for example, I was at university with. So it's like, you know, what have you been doing in these last 20 years? What have I been doing? And that's also the thing that we record. So we might go to the pub, for example, and do the recording. But we're also sharing that, because people will listen and say, yeah, I knew both of you at different times, or, you know, there was a particular part of what you said that completely relates to what I'm doing. So there's almost that sort of public service element, or therapy. And it can be therapy for me. It can be therapy for the person being interviewed, but also for the people who are listening. And during lockdown, I know that there were people who were like, you know, I'm not able to speak to people, but through your podcast, I'm engaging with the world.
Well, that's arguably when podcast boomed, wasn't it, really? Yeah. I mean, podcasts were obviously around before then. But, yeah, COVID, that's when I started jumping into them. Never thought I'd make one.
Yeah.
It's surprisingly easy as well. Like, I'd say to anyone, if you've got a passion about it, film, gaming, whatever, comic books, it doesn't matter, stamps, train sets, and you want to talk about it, there will be someone out there that wants to talk about it as well. And why not make a podcast? Like you say, it's relatively inexpensive to set up. A couple of mics. I use Podbean. You use a different service. But it's what I pay £9 a month or something like that. And it does it all for you. It's just very easy.
And I have to finish, because it was something that you talked about in the TV programme, that when you got married, was it a Dragon Ball Z? Was it a cake? Or was it the entire wedding that was kitted out?
So the cake... We had the two main characters. We had the main character Goku and his wife in their little wedding outfits. They were our cake toppers. On our tables, so we had seven tables, and there are seven Dragon Balls. So they were each in a jar with a Dragon Ball in each. And then what else did we do? Oh, we did like the photography. We did lots of like the Kai blasts, like being blown away in the photography. We did a fusion dance in the photography. It was quite heavily. Yeah, involved, I have to say.
And I will be meeting you, by the time this goes out, I will have met your wife, but was she a convert before, during, or after the wedding?
Before the wedding, but not before meeting me. Okay. So I converted her when we was engaged. And that she doesn't love it as much as me, to be fair. That would be a stretch. But she does enjoy it. And if there's a new series that come out, she will actively be like, we should watch that. We should give it a go.
Well, you. Anybody listening to this will be thinking, you know, there's so much of the story. We could talk for longer, but fascinating insight. Lovely, great, tantalising note to end on.
Yeah.
I might ask Stacey that this afternoon. Wonderful, Harry. Thank you so much for being my guest this week.
Thank you for having me.